Well, they don't have a gavel, but I'll call the meeting to order
nonetheless.
The agenda tonight, first of all, thank you all for being here. It's just nice to have a crowd. Sometimes we just talk to the chairs, so glad to see you all out there. And I'll just give everybody just a second just to introduce yourself, just let everyone know who you are. And on this side of the table, planning board members. And this is staff, so we'll go through everybody real quick.
New member, Sandy Watson.
New member, Dr. Steve Woodsmore.
I'm a new member too, Kenzie Jackson.
My name's Mike West. I'm the chair. I'm not a new member. I'm soon to be a retired member.
My name is Taylor Lawson. I'm the program assistant in the Planning and Community Development Department.
My name is Joy Fields. I'm the county planner.
All right. We start with public comment. 15-minute time limit. Does anyone have public comment? Don't have to sign up. Just got to stand up and start. Yes, sir.
I'm Eric Tinsley, and this is my brother Mike. His wife Kathy, and we're here in reference to the cell tower being proposed. It's adjacent to our mother's property. My brother, it's family land all to the south of it. And our main concern is the skyline. There's a preview of the mountain in that direction. And some cell towers are very unsightly and some are not.
Okay.
That's my main concern.
Mr. Denzel, we actually have a bit. We're going to talk about that more extensively in a few minutes, but I'm glad you introduced the subject. But we're going to talk more extensively about the tower in just a few minutes. And I actually have a picture here of what it will look like, and you're welcome to look at it. As a matter of fact, are there any extras? Let's just wait till we get to that part. But yeah, we have a shot of the, what's that called? A
simulation.
Monopole simulation. So we give you a look at how it looks. Any other? Yes, sir.
My name is Larry White. I live off in Sequoia Woods area. We have no cell service up there. And I would just like to make a couple of comments on cell service. It has nothing to do with commerce. It has nothing to do with making life easier for people. It has to do with safety. I was in EMS a long time ago up in Michigan. And I often think about the people that we could have saved, or the heartache and pain we could have saved with the ambulance if we would have had cell service up there. And that was back in the late 70s, early 80s, when it wasn't available anywhere. Here we are in 2017. We have no cell service south of town here. And I just can't imagine in today's time that we cannot supply a safety element for the people that live up in that area. Whether you're working in the woods and you have a heart attack, or if a car runs off the road in the middle of the night, something like that, having cell service is very important. I'd like to see cell service 276 all the way to the state line.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anybody else? Okay. I have item number 3 being approval of agenda, but I would like to suggest a change to the agenda. I would suggest that we swap item 7A with item 6A, the reason being folks here are mostly here to talk about the cell tower, and if they want to leave after that, that would shorten the time they need to be here.
Seconded.
We need a motion first.
Moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Okay, that carries. So we'll go to the very shortly. We'll move into the new business. Next item is approval of minutes. Everyone had the chance to look at the minutes, and I would entertain a motion to adopt them.
Motion to adopt the minutes.
Second. Any discussion? Any changes? Any corrections? Anything? All right. Hearing no objections or discussions or changes or anything, I move that we vote, and all in favor of accepting the minutes from last month, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Also, just to make mention, I'm sure everybody got it, but here's the information, contact information for members of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to make sure everybody was aware of that. The next item, I guess I better not put my agenda up. Next item is subdivision approvals and updates. Dory?
All right. Over the last month, we have had 12 exemptions to the subdivision ordinance. Most of them were changing of boundary lines between adjoining properties. So if the boundary lines are changed and the number of lots remain the same, it is not a division of land, and it is approved or reviewed as an exception to the definition of subdivision. In the last month, we have also had 1 3-lot subdivision and 1 2-lot subdivision come through our office, be reviewed and approved. Any questions?
All right. Any questions? Okay. We had a change in the we voted on this a moment ago to move item 7A ahead of item 6A, so at this time we'll review the telecommunications tower application review.
All right. As written, the telecommunications tower ordinance is a permissive ordinance. And it says in it that if the applicant provides all of their requirements within the ordinance, then there is a chance for public comment and planning board review. But if they have everything and they meet the intent and the safety set forth in the ordinance, then it is approved. So tonight we have an application from TowerCom for a tower. The tower itself is 135 feet and it's a monopole, and there is a 2-foot lightning rod on top of it. So the total structure is 137 feet. From the point in the property where the tower will be located, there is 137 feet to either edge of the property, so the entire length of the tower would be contained within that property boundary if it fell from the base. And as the applicant described, the tower is designed such that the fall zone is less than the entire height based on engineering design. It breaks off midway so that the entire thing does not collapse. At this time, I would like to let TowerCom representatives say a few words, and if you have questions about their application, please let them answer them or ask myself, and we'll pull up documents.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Fields, thank you very much for the introduction. My name is Micah Russell. Is this good to sit here? Where
I might want to turn around and face these folks here.
Okay, all right, perfect.
However you want to do it.
All right. Again, my name is Micah Russell. I'm with TowerCom. I'm the Director of Operations. Our office is located at 5611 North Carolina Highway 55 in Durham, North Carolina. We are a developer of tower sites all over the country, but our office primarily handles sites here in the southeast. I didn't want to take too much time, but the Tinsleys have showed up and had some comments about our tower, so I definitely want to go a little bit more into some of the details of what we're doing here. The tower, we develop our sites based on customer need. And in this particular instance, Verizon Wireless has asked us to, or had asked us to, identify a piece of property in a particular search area. It would then, based on that location, connect with their surrounding sites, provide new coverage to some of the areas they don't at this time have, you know, effective coverage at. And so, you know, our charge is to get out there in the field and identify these properties. The two things we're looking for when we're out there are, number one, property owner interest. If you're not interested in having a tower on your property, we understand, but certainly, you know, again, we've got to find a willing landlord, and we found that in this ordinance. The second thing is obviously meeting the requirements of your county's ordinance. Transylvania County has a very specific set of rules. We go out there, and Mr. Ed Justice is here this evening. He is our site acquisition agent who identified the properties that we consider, and we make sure that we can meet all of the rules. And I think with this application, with this particular structure, our main point here is that we do meet all the requirements. This tower is only 135 feet tall, which in our business, in our world, is considerably shorter than what we typically develop. A lot of the towers I saw coming in from Asheville today, there's a couple of poles along that highway, and most of those are in the 180, 190, approaching 200 range. And that's pretty standard and typical. So in this particular instance, when we got out here, we saw the property and we saw the surroundings. We knew the church was there. We knew that some of you folks had some houses out that way. Our goal with Verizon is to really implore them to use the most minimum height they could to complete their objective. So that's where we ended up with 135 feet. I mean, it's considerably shorter than your typical tower, but in this instance, we think it's not only going to serve Verizon's needs, but we had it designed for other carriers. T-Mobile, U.S. Cellular, Sprint, AT&T, they come along and they need to provide service to this particular part of the county. We will make that structure available to them, thereby hopefully reducing the need for another tower in this particular area. Again, I'll be here to answer any questions you might have about the site. I know there were some discussions about fall zones. Ms. Fields has a report that we had. We commissioned what's called a photo simulation. Essentially, what we will do is we have an engineer, we have a photographer who can get out in these areas, identify different viewpoints from in the immediate vicinity, and from those viewpoints, simulate what this tower of this height, of this scale, of this bulk would look like. And of course, you can see, yes, that the tower is visible, but even in this photograph here, you notice there's the telephone lines along the highway. I mean, this is part of our infrastructure that we have in this country these days. So, again, at 135 feet, that's essentially what the site's going to look like. If this was 180 or 199, you can obviously tell that we're going to be significantly higher. The other thing that we purposely did is not looked at the ridges. If we get on these mountain ridges or these hill ridges, now you're talking about even a 135-foot tower has a lot more view from a lot more places. So, we're just trying our best to minimize the overall impact to you and your community. The only other point I'll make is just, one of the things we did in the course of studying Transylvania County and trying to address our customer Verizon's needs is to look at, how you treat towers here. And the one thing that I did notice is that, your most recent comprehensive plan talks about improving wireless coverage in the county. Mr. White made a comment about that just a few minutes ago. And certainly, TowerCom, like any other of our infrastructure development companies out there, will certainly be interested in working with the county to find, other spots where we can put these types of structures, meet your needs, minimize the proliferation of towers, but also get the service to the folks you need. So, again, I'm just here to answer questions that you or any folks in the audience might have.
Well, let's start with the folks out here.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Any questions?
Where exactly on Mr. North's property? I see the picture, but kind of where is that located?
It's going to be the rear of Mr. North's property, back to where he's got that shop. One of the things that we were working with him on is that, he's got quite a bit of equipment back there.
That's a nice
equipment. Right. So one of the things that he understands, and we certainly expect him to follow through with what he had told us, is that, number one, the area that we're going to be developing the tower, it's a 50 by 50 space. It'll be fenced. It'll be secure. We certainly expect and have asked Mr. Moore, number one, to remove all of the equipment. If it's unusable, dispose of it. We obviously are leasing land, so he's getting he's being compensated for the space, but we also ask him to be as good of a neighbor as we're going to try to be to y'all and enforce it.
So if I'm correct, it's behind his shop, you would say where it is.
Well, if you, yeah, here's the site plan.
It's up here, Mike. If you can see it, you want to walk up here. If you can see it from there.
I can't see it from here.
I can't see it from here, so that's why I'm right.
If you take that private drive, I think it's Rabbit Creek around.
Oh, I think we, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, would you mind if I step up here?
No, sir, no bit.
His road kind of comes back here and then it curves back to where his shop is.
Right.
We are actually taking that little flat area right beside his little retaining wall. So we're actually in a little lower part of the property. You got the other houses about right here.
Right.
So we're going to be stuck in it, the power lines going that way.
So you're kind of between his mother's house and the
shop. Yes, sir. That's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you want to look at those simulated pictures again,
yeah,
way close?
That's my direct view.
Yeah. Well, if...
That's my direct view, and I've got pictures. I could show you some real pretty pictures I've got, but that's my direct view.
So are you on this side of the highway?
No, I'm on the same side of the highway.
Oh, okay.
I'm up on the hill just above.
Okay.
And our mother is very direct view. Mm-hmm. So everything pretty much on that other side... This is our property.
Mm. Well, like I said, you know, when we were trying to find the best location on the property, obviously we were trying to, we had to stay centrally located. We didn't want to have it close to a property line. As Ms. Fields mentioned, one of the things that the ordinance allows is for us to design the tower to collapse on itself. And if you know, say with a 130-foot tower, we could, you know, design a halfway break point. The ordinance would allow us to move the tower closer to property lines.
Right.
But in this particular instance, we felt it most appropriate to be the height of the tower from all the property lines, get us right in the middle as far as we can maximize.
Well, I think I'm hearing if you meet all the requirements, it really doesn't matter what we say, correct?
Well, no, I mean, certainly. I mean, we would like to do whatever we can, but, I mean, that spot is, you can see here at a 135-foot tower, if we move a little further this way, we get too close to that corner. You know, if we move it too far this way, we get close to that property line. I guess that's your old property line this way.
Your intent is to, in the future, attach more antennas to it.
Well, we want to make it available.
I mean, it won't look like your drawings with the, if you start putting arms and antennas on it.
Right. I mean, you know, this is a simulation with Verizon on there. If AT&T were to come along, yeah, they don't use the same antennas. They don't share antennas. They have to have their own separate system, you know, network system on.
And it's no longer a pole.
Right? So, it can be multiple. Then. Is there lights on this? No lights?
This is unlit. No, sir. It's going to be below the
spread. And I'd say there's a fence around it.
Yes, sir. It's going to be a 6-foot fence, top of barbed wire, secure 24/7. Once Verizon installs their equipment, they get it tied into the sheriff. So if anybody were to, you know,
right,
unauthorization.
But it's just fenced something around the base. It's not the whole fault.
That's right. Yeah, it's just the 50-foot by 50-foot.
Okay. Have you considered, or would you consider making it a monopond camouflage?
You know, the problem with the monopons, I know they're some decent examples, but for the most part, most of the companies that develop and design these stealth-type structures, you know, the issue is with pine trees, they're supposed to have, you know, nice long branches. Structurally, from an engineering standpoint, you can't put a 30-foot branch on a monopine. So they end up looking like these bottle brush trees you'd see out in Colorado. And what we found in a few sites that we've done like this, we did a site like this down at the beach, you know, it essentially draws your eye to it. It doesn't have the effect of hiding it and concealing it. You know, you see this big, you know, green Q-tip.
Well, there's one right outside my office window. I'm in Biltmore Forest, and it doesn't look like a tree, but there's pine trees in the backdrop,
yeah,
and almost no one notices it when they pull in the parking lot.
Yeah,
it standing along, you know, it would look goofy.
Yeah.
But it really made a big difference.
Yeah.
And that's the only way. And I was, and I agree with Mr. White. You know, it's important to have for safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason we put ours up. We have our communication antennas on it, too.
Right.
But the only way we were able to, I guess, get the residents to accept it was to camouflage it, paint it, mm-hmm, you know, the color of the trees and...
Yeah,
and it helped a lot.
There are a lot of instances that I find that those can be effective and they can be appropriate. You know, I think the balance, the delicate balance that we try to address with every one of our towers, not just this one, is just kind of balancing whether, you know, that the monopine, you know, structure and that effort is, you know, in the end pays off. Because, you know, my contention and my, you know, point that I've made, and I think, you know, a lot of people tend to agree with it, is once these things are up, for the most part, you forget it's there. I mean, you all of a sudden you've got better coverage, you know, and like I said, with the other shock that we have here, you know, you've got the telephone poles running down the highway, and you've got, you know,
so it's a power poles.
Power poles.
Objective.
Okay, sorry. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, you know, you've got the Duke Energy poles down the right of way. I mean, you know, as best as we can to hide these, we will try. But at the end of the day, what we mostly rely on is just good, responsible locations.
Is this going to reach? I agree. I know out that way there's not cell phone service. Is that going to help the service out towards Sequoia Woods and Pike Connolly Falls?
No, but it is part of an overall network.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Because you still got a long way in a mountain that's going to block you.
Right.
That you'd have to be 500 feet tall if it was going to do something.
I agree. Well, and you know, the thing that I'd love to tell everybody is, you know, trust me, when this site's up, you all have great coverage. But that's just not the case.
We have good coverage there than just beyond there. There's
right. And it's just a priority. I mean, for instance, in this particular site, we've been working on this for quite a while. Verizon, you know, this is a massive company, and in every one of our 50 states, they're constantly reprioritizing their sites. But they do have a little bit of method to the madness. You know, once this site goes up, it shoots them a little bit further down the highway. Now their engineers are focused on that next spot, and then the next spot. I mean,
so if I'd say what you're saying, there's a more kind of string of towers on out the road.
Yes, sir. These things, the charge that Verizon has is not just to provide an island of coverage. They don't want to just cover y'all in the valley there. They want to be able to make sure that it has continuous coverage all the way down these roads. So, you know,
so if they have them in Sequoia Woods, this tower has nothing to do with that.
Probably not.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, it is indicative of a trend.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, again, with the comprehensive plan of your county saying that, hey, we need it, we demand a better service, you know, companies like ours, we are definitely interested in helping these folks along because, you know, at the end of the day, obviously a lot of this has to do with financials. Verizon spends a ton of money. This equipment, the antennas themselves aren't expensive, but the equipment that is used to switch and to work our phones to make sure that we can all take, you know, calls and
so
watch YouTube videos on our phones.
So more phones.
That's right. I mean, it's not a cheap endeavor. So each site is representative of quite an investment.
Is there ever a chance of that being added to go taller?
Well, you know, I can't give you to say that that's not the case. But what I could say is that if there was ever an opportunity or a situation where we were asked to extend our tower to allow, say, AT&T or a U.S. Sailor to attach to it, if they say that, you know, because once you put Verizon 135, technically the next available spot is going to be probably around 127, 125. At that height, I can't tell you how everybody else's networks are going to function. I can't tell you if that's going to work perfectly or if you're saying
to go higher, you'd have to come back and
but then we'd have to come back.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. That was
it
would be a public hearing.
Yes,
sir. It would be an opportunity.
So are you 130 feet away from the property line now?
137. Yes, sir.
So you couldn't go any higher and get a permit then, correct?
Without any kind of special permission, yes, sir.
Because if you got to have the following line.
They certainly could apply to do it, but yeah, they're going to come back and do it.
That's right.
Because that falls on the other problem, the driveway going.
Yeah. Well, but again, with the fall zone, you know, these structures don't fall end over end. I'll tell you, I used to have an engineer that would write a letter that folks were concerned about towers falling end over end.
Right.
So the type of natural event it's going to take to knock this thing end over end, that's going to be the least of your worries.
Okay.
Every man-made structure in the area is going to go away.
All right.
So, but what these things are designed to do, they're not going to break like a dead tree. They're not going to crack and a big piece of the metal fall on the ground. This is like taking a clothes hanger out of your closet and bending that thing back and forth, and you watch the metal as it kinks. That's how towers fail. So it's not going to just break and fall over to your mother's property or your property. The tower's going to kink, it's going to bend, it's going to, you know, flex. And once that 100-mile-an-hour wind and the 2 inches of ice on the tower caused this thing to happen, which is a very rare occasion, as we all know, this isn't, you're not going to have debris, you know, running into your properties. It's just going to be a situation where we're now going to have this vent tower. We'll have to unbolt from the earth, take it up, and replace it.
What is your design criteria?
This one is designed for four, total of four sets of antennas. And because of the ordinance requirement that we could reduce our setback with an engineer's design, we didn't get this one specifically designed for a height. So when it's not designed for a height, the safety factor is always 50%. So we could upgrade the steel to the structure and get an engineered letter that says that it could fail within 10% or 20% of its height, which at 130 feet would be 26 feet.
What's the floor button? What's the wind speed in this?
Oh, wind speed? Roughly, it's whatever. We have to, at the absolute minimum, we have to meet whatever Transylvania County's code is. So I believe you're probably in an 80-mile-an-hour zone here for a 3-second gust, and that's probably with 3/4-inch ice. I think.
You follow the North Carolina State Building Codes.
Right, and which back refers to International Building Code. So we follow whatever International Building Code is. So I actually have a copy of the design. I can get that exact number if you like.
Yes, sir.
No, I have not served yet.
That's good enough.
So the question, so the 135 feet was driven by the location and
yes, sir.
Property.
Yes, sir.
So if we didn't have that, what was your idea? If you'd have had wide open space to put a tower out there, what would it ideally have been?
Well, in that circle, so again, when we're dealing with search rings, the ideal spot is the dot on the map. But what they'll do is they'll give us a little bit of a buffer area. So that buffer area in this particular instance is about 1/4 mile. We're actually not on the target here. So we're a little bit off the target, but in that 1/4 mile, if I'm recalling correctly, it was anywhere between 150 and 130. Or 130, I think 135.
When Ed came to our office, it was proposed for 140 feet.
Right. So that was a lot of working with Joy and Mr. Burroughs to understand your ordinance and understand that, you know, at the height we're proposing, it would be a much better situation if we could lower the tower, which we then in turn had to go to Verizon and ask for their radio frequency engineers to confirm that it still worked.
So this simulation says 150. So is this does this depict a 150-foot tower?
No, sir. That's definitely 130. That's I don't think all of them said 150. I hope they don't all
say 150. They did. The one I have.
Yeah.
They all said 150.
The photo simulations.
Well, the photo simulation itself is definitely 130. I think that was an error I noticed early on.
Okay.
And I'd asked our vendor to revise that to confirm that it was a 130.
Okay.
Yeah, that height right there. Because even at 150, it's not significantly different, especially when you're standing, you know, in this particular view almost 1,000 feet away. I got to be honest, it takes a very keen eye to tell the difference between a 130 pole and a 150 pole when you're 1,000 feet away. Standing directly under it, you can probably tell the difference. But this one, we had to double check a couple of times because I did notice that error. Joy, I think maybe we just emailed the wrong electronic copy. I have one that was corrected that says 130. Yes, sir.
RCL Baptist Church has an emergency helicopter landing pad in their parking lot.
Yes, sir.
They don't use it often. What about lighting on the tower? Is there going to be a blinking red light or navigation aid? That to me might be more obnoxious than anything is having a reminder.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Well, first of all, the FAA has already determined that this particular tower at this height, at this location, it would not need to be lit. So we're not going to light it. But I'll tell you, just as fair question, though, a lot of the local municipalities and counties will establish these emergency zones for helicopter. Helicopter pilots are not a lot different than FAA-certified, you know, fixed-wing pilots. They're all notified of where the structures are. And if we had a tower that was lit, for instance, and the light went out, there would be a NOTAM sent out, which is a notice to airmen. And in this case, you don't have to worry about it, but the helicopter, you know, folks, anybody coming from Mission or any of your hot area hospitals would know that there's a structure in the area and they would know not to approach from this area. I mean, there's safety factors built into that as well, but it is definitely not lit.
Mission Hospital has requested lights be put on towers mm-hmm. before that were approved by the FAA not to.
what I mean. I certainly don't want to cause any more alarm than I have to. If the FAA were to do something like that to us, the first thing we would try to do is ask for that red, white paint scheme. But some people find it even more objectionable than the gray tower. When we do have to take them in letters, any tower that's higher than 200 feet, regardless of whether it's 100 miles from the nearest airport, it automatically triggers lighting. And in our industry these days, it's number one, an LED light, so it consumes less electricity. But number two, it's an automated light where it's red beacon at night, and then the flashing white during the day. It's done by a photo cell, so it automatically switches over. But again, that's not even a consideration here. We're not having this tower lit at all.
Do you take the historic value of the property here, but that road, that area is the Estacote Path. Our great grandmother was born on that mountain right behind us in the early 1890s.
Yeah.
She said that was a huge Indian village. Mm-hmm. From there's a marker about a mile up the road. The Walton Wall was fought about a mile north toward the bar. There's a marker there. So,
you know, a lot of people don't like to hear this, but when it comes to historical observations, historical considerations, it all, you know, goes back to that little bitty office in Raleigh, the State Historical Preservation Office. They do review all of our towers. That's part of the EPA, FCC requirements. Generally, the rule is for cell towers, if it's below 250 feet, it's in that you cannot have a historical structure within 3/4 mile without a balloon test. In this instance, I knew we did have some historical properties, some historical buildings and old homes. I saw a sign for an 1857 house out there, but they were far enough away that the SHPO office didn't consider that. As the Native American tribes, I tried to get that number before we came in here tonight, but generally, in this part of the state, we have to get approval from about 12 Native American tribes. It's not just the ones that live here. It's any tribe that ever passed through. So that's part of our process, and every single one of those tribes signs off to make sure that we're not in proximity to any of their burial grounds, any of their former villages. So it's definitely, you know, the zoning piece sometimes is much easier than the federal and the state requirements you have to go through to make sure that these are accepted.
Mm-hmm. The Broad River is a big draw for tourism, summer camps, and I don't know if you checked, but I imagine if, you know, canoes, whoever on the river would be able to see that. I've dealt with and worked with American Tower, the tower that's where I work at.
Yeah.
And, you know, the monopine, it really blends in, and there's pine trees near where your tower is going to be. I don't know how much that increases the cost. Is this going to belong to the ride?
No, it's going to be our job. We're going to own and operate.
It's not. It would be well. I'm sure our family would appreciate it greatly in the county. Just if nothing else for the impact on tourism, you know, the aesthetics. That's pretty much the industry of this county now. Mm-hmm. Is tourism.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a popular area, summer camps up the road, all around us.
Yeah. You know, the only, you know, comment I can make to the monopines is, you know, again, I just feel like having seen so many of these things pumped out that, you know, I just truly feel like it does draw your eye because it's just impossible to match, you know, these native pines we have here in North Carolina. The other thing is that the monopines, once the structure's up, or if you were able to go and look at another monopole, regular monopole type tower somewhere in the county, you'd see that the scale of these things are going to be significantly different. Not only are you designing to have the antennas that are going to be installed in the tower, but now you're also engineering the tower for the branches. And branches, fake branches are no different than real branches. They create wind sail. They create, ice, places for ice to build up on. So, the structures you're talking about with monopines and flagpoles, they're significantly wider. There's a perceptible difference in the bulk.
If you didn't have an intent to attach antennas to it in the future, I would agree with you, but
it is a requirement of our ordinance that towers try to co-locate on existing towers. Yes. And if they are not able to do so, then they can find a suitable location that is greater than a half mile away from an existing tower.
Yeah, and that's kind of an argument for the modern times. It really helps kind of blunt the other end. You know, I look at this every time I go to work. It's, you know, I worked with American Tower for about a year with the planning on this. We drove around to the VA hospital. There's a modern time behind here. You know, there's several of them around, and many of them people drive by them all the time. It's one of the VA hospitals. You know, I've talked to a lot of people that's had family members there they visit, and until I told them it's there and they looked for it, so they never knew it was there. And if it wasn't camouflaged as a tree, it would stick out like that when it doesn't fit.
Yeah. You know, all I can tell you is from my years of experience, you know, I make the argument the same can be said for normal towers. I mean, there's a, you know, I see them everywhere because I deal with them every day, but I'm sure there are plenty of people. That monopole right probably up near the county line, you know, on the left-hand side of the road, you're coming towards Brevard, that's a big monopole. I bet most people have forgotten it's there, and that thing's loaded up with antennas. And it's just, you know, once you have someone, okay, you drive this road every day, how many towers do you see? It's awful hard for folks to pick them out. And again, we're driven, you know, solely by the ordinance. You know, you were mentioning about additional antennas. Yes, we would love to have more antennas on our tower, but the other thing is it's a requirement. I mean, it there's definitely a cost factor involved in engineering these things to have, you know, the structural capacity to take on more antennas.
Thank you for being here to share this information with us.
One more question. Are there any additional infrastructure improvements that along the highway that would service the tower?
The only improvement would be fiber. If there's not currently fiber optic service along the highway, these systems don't work without that. You can't put it on copper.
Can you say what was there already?
I'm not certain what it. You know, that's, you know, the unfortunate piece is because our towers don't require the fiber itself, the fiber is brought in by the carriers. So Verizon is the one that's going to call for fiber optic to deliver. I couldn't tell you what they had out there.
The lease, can you talk about the term of the lease? Is it a long term, 99-year lease kind of thing? Or is it something that needs to be renewed? Or
it is a long term lease. I mean, that's not the extent of what I can say. I mean, that's all proprietary. It's, you know, Verizon, and, you know, they don't typically engage in having, you know, tower sites built for them unless they can have some guarantee of a long period of time. It's usually
Thank you.
I mean, this is, you know, we're talking about technology that's been around now for 20 some years, and they're still using some of those 20-year-old towers.
So, in terms of the lease allowed, are any additional usage of the 50 by 50 besides the cell tower?
No. Mm-hmm. Our leases are simply only for a single use, and that's for a single development communication tower. We couldn't, you know, number one, we couldn't build another tower in our own compound just because of our lease agreement. But number two, the county's ordinance has a 1.5 mile separation requirement.
Does it have a generator backup or anything? Or?
It depends on the carrier. Verizon, I believe, they do use a generator backup. But they also use, most of the time on most of their sites, are sheltered sites. You either have the two types of equipment are typically deployed, and you can go look at this monopole down the road here. It's either going to be an enclosed shelter with a generator inside the building or an external. I'm not certain at this point what Verizon intends to deploy here.
You have a, I just have one quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
This tower is necessary in order down the road to get service for, you know, where it's needed, going towards Cedar Mountain and all that, where it's nothing. I mean, it's really hard to get a cell signal. So this is necessary to get to there, eventually.
Yes, ma'am. Eventually, yes. But what I will also tell you is these days, back in the 90s, that one was about coverage. That wasn't about, you know, you have a town like Brevard that had no coverage, and then one day they flip a switch and all of a sudden we all had service here. Now, generally, they have a robust network across the state of North Carolina. So it's not only, you know, building out the highway and having more coverage, but it's also capacity on the network. You know, these kids, when they're watching YouTube videos at stoplight, it has a serious stress on the network. So this is definitely a capacity side as well.
Okay. Thank you.
How much, I know you're not the carrier, but is right there in that area, the Tinsley said they had coverage. Is there a gap right there, or is there a gap this is going to address until future towers can be built?
Well, again, it goes back to that coverage versus capacity. You know, there are plenty of sites these days that I do that I can make a telephone call no problem at all. The issue is being able to, number one, hold that call, and number two, be able to use the data service, the capacity of the network to be able to, have whatever the measurement requirement is, however many gigabytes the federal government requires these guys to have. So the short answer is, yes, there are probably places along that part of the highway, even further out, further south, that have some level of Verizon coverage. It's just not the level of coverage that Verizon expects and is required by their FCC licenses.
Okay. I guess my question is that I want to make sure we're going somewhere. If we're going to do this, I want to make sure we're heading toward... I'm with the gentleman from Sequoia Woods. I'm sorry I didn't get your name, but I would like to be able to, when I get old, well, maybe it's already happened, but when I get older, if I have a wreck, no, sir, in no way, shape, or form.
There's definitely a means to an end. I mean, right. These guys would love at some point in the near future to have 100% coverage of this country.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to take more towers,
right,
more improvements to the technology. I think, though, what you're saying is, they wouldn't just put this site right there on Greenville Highway and expect to stop there.
Right. Well,
they expect to keep on going down the road.
I'm sympathetic to the Tinsley situation because the 9,000-foot pole on top of the dump, I can see when I walk out my door, but at the same time, I can make a phone call.
Right.
Where I couldn't 2 years ago.
Yes, sir.
3 years ago. So I'm sympathetic to it, but I want to make sure that if we can do this, we're heading somewhere. The next question I have, I guess, is a little bit more operational. If there's an outdoor generator, what precautions are taken to make sure that it doesn't become a hindrance to everybody around them as far as noise goes?
Well, so the first thing is and again, I am not a representative of Verizon.
Right.
So when Verizon's going to have to get a building permit to install their equipment on this tower and equipment on the ground. So, at that time, certainly your building permitting staff should ask any questions that you might have that I can't adequately answer tonight. But what I'll tell you is, their backup generator is a mandate from the federal government.
Right.
After September 11th, after every one of these blackouts that we have across this country, they've got not only a backup generator, but they've got a massive string of batteries in there. This is to provide not only, 8 hours of immediate battery backup, but then that's when it, so when the power goes out, for Verizon especially, it's first batteries.
Okay.
So we have a nasty storm coming through here, knocks everybody's power off, you won't hear that generator initially. But after 8 hours, if we're still down, their mandate is to have that network back on air.
Okay.
So that generator will kick on. The only other thing that those generators, just like every other commercial generator does, it goes through recycling every month.
Right.
So once a month for 15 minutes, it cranks itself up, and it gets muffled properly. That's maybe something you want to ask Verizon to supply, which I could supply. I have their specs on their generator, but it's a properly muffled generator. I think it's a 5 kW generator, so it's not a massive engine. But it's, if you're standing beside it, you're going to want to,
Okay.
But it's muffled.
So in general, there are. Verizon has procedures to muffle it, or regulations.
They have procedures to muffle it, and not only that, like I was mentioned earlier, when they build these sites, they have so much money tied up in these sites, they want to protect that investment.
Right.
They're all
right.
Wired into what's called a National Operations Center.
Mm-hmm.
Each quadrant of our country is a National Operations Center. So as soon as that generator kicks on, the National Operations Center is notified. They, number one, double check that it's weather related, it's commercial service related, and number two, they make sure it's not an error. So if it is an error, they can, number one, remotely turn it off. Number two, they can send a technician out to get it fixed.
All right.
I guess this question is more for you. Is there anything about locating this tower here that would affect the neighbor's ability to build a home near their property line or a barn? There's nothing about the fact of this tower being here that's going to affect the neighbor's ability to use their property.
No, because it is completely contained within the property boundary. Even if it did shear off of the ground, which it most likely will not. Okay. Staff, after reviewing this, would like to recommend a conditional approval. And the condition is that prior to receiving a building permit and a signed permit from Planning and Community Development Office, we do require an environmental protection document from them. And that is the only thing that we do not have in house currently. And based on the ordinance, it specifically says that that is required prior to a building permit, but not prior to approval. Or, I mean, prior to issuance of a permit.
All right. So, does anybody have any board members have any more questions for? I'm sorry, I missed your name. I don't know my name right now. I've been up just for about my apologies. Any more comments from the public?
If you haven't made, or if you're not sure if you're still debating on this, to possibly change the rendering to a monotone and what the artist has drawn, just to have a comparison of what it would look like if it were a pine versus a gray pole.
That's not required by us, I don't think, but if that would be between you two.
Okay.
If you want to discuss that, because, I mean, as far as the requirements of the ordinance go, we have what we need, except for the environmental protection statement. But if you want to discuss that further between the two of you, that's certainly between the two of you. But
it very well could keep our property value from dropping, because it's going to be direct line of view.
Okay.
It'll hurt a lot for several people.
My recommendation would be that the two of you discuss that, because, as I said, as far as the requirements for the ordinance, this is what we need. You know, we have what we need. But if you want to discuss that further, that's certainly understandable.
My guess is a lot of times a lot more expensive, so it probably isn't going to happen.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's expensive. It's large in scale. I mean, there are a lot. It limits the number of antennas.
Right.
You know, you start limiting the number of antennas you can place on a tower, that reduces the capacity, that reduces the coverage. That means another site's going to have to be built somewhere in the near vicinity.
That reduces the rent on your tower you get to?
No.
Okay. I just thought you said it reduced the capacity.
It reduced the capacity, but that's a Verizon problem. That means that now they're only able to provide this much coverage when they wanted to provide that much coverage.
Sure.
So now they've got to stick either another tower or two towers on each side of this one to steal it. Yeah, maintain the objective they had.
Well, the monopine that I dealt with, it's 150 feet tall, and it has there's at least four cell companies. So Verizon, AT&T, U.S. Cellular has their own network around Sprint. It's every X number of feet up the pole. You know, can branch out the antennas. And they camouflage the antenna with greenery.
You have a motion on the floor for conditional approval by Steve Blitzmall.
Okay. You make the one?
I did.
Second. All right. With that being said, is there a discussion?
I'm sorry, what is the motion?
Conditional approval.
Steve Woodsmall made a motion for conditional approval of telecommunications tower application pending receipt of an environmental protection document being received from George Wilson County Planner.
Okay.
Or by.
Which is a required document for?
For building.
For building.
I'm sympathetic to Tinsley, but I'm also sympathetic to being able to have the phone service 10 years ago. I didn't have a cell phone. Now I can't go without it. And I think that's true of most people. Unfortunately, that means you have to have these antennas.
Any other comments? I'll second your comments there. I had the same thing as I said earlier. I used to have to go to the football field in Rosman and stand between the goalpost and the concession stand, and there was one little place where you got sitting. Mm-hmm. And on Friday nights, everybody was crowded in with this little 12-foot spot. But the tower at the dump is... Well, it's one of those tripod. It's an ugly, big, ugly monstrosity, but I have service. And unfortunately, I feel like a part of doing business is those towers. If there was a better way to do it, I'd be all for it.
Amen.
You know, but given the fact that I feel like we're going somewhere with those, we're going to eventually be able to get coverage in the county in places we don't have it, and there are some places in the county that I can drive you to where there's no signal at all. Given that consideration and knowing what I know about that big tower at the dump, I'm in favor of granting the conditional permit.
Call the question.
All right. Being no more discussion, all in favor of a conditional permit pending an environmental protection document, whatever it's called, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, motion carries. And if you want to stay and listen to the rest of it, you can.
Sign control.
Thank you for the invitation and the discussion. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Got empty in a hurry. Nice. Mm-hmm.
I dare not say that. I was in that position. So I say I used to get a transmission line. So
yeah, I mean that's it's just one of those.
I see so it. Be sympathetic. You've got to handle it.
Well,
we don't really have any. Of course, you call that permissive.
If they have everything, you guys review it, and because it's a property right, you have authority if they're requesting a variance to deny it, and you have authority to deny it, but you have to specifically point to why. It can't just be because it's ugly.
Yeah. Okay.
But their application then all approved, right?
Yeah.
It's a.
There's nothing for us to accept.
They modified their application so they would not have to request a variance.
And I think if they'll just do a simulation with a pine tree on it, they'll be all right. If you want to find out your tower, where that thing's sitting, it'll be a big ugly green pole.
Yeah.
Instead of a big ugly silver pole.
And you get that same number of providers on it, it's going to be
100 feet.
Right. Because it's only a short tower.
Right. I mean, I feel pretty comfortable about it.
I don't know how you're going to have any towers.
Right. I mean, if there was a better way to do it, I'd be all for it.
But it's not something you can put a cable in there and do it.
All right.
And all right. If Verizon really is putting cable to get there, that might move forward cable out that direction.
My suspicion is we're going to be doing this by satellite in 15 years, but
I know. I just think this is probably
going to
be outdated.
Technology.
Didn't that come up before? Were you on the board then? That question came up before about the longevity of these towers based on the fact that technology may change.
I'll be right back.
All right.
Okay, so we're taking
Let's take
a time break.
I went through this time to get a substation approval. Moved it 3 or 4 times, and every time I got pitchforks.
I know this is going to be a short meeting because it's not any tough.
You just have to stand there and take time.
And second thing is the NFL draft starts in 5 minutes.
Right, we got to get out of here.
I got to see where Deshaun Watson is going.
You know what? Got to see where Deshaun Watson is.
If I wasn't, I'll give the time necessary to be able to score.
We'll use our other one next time. We will.
That is a spitter there. Mm-hmm. All right. Good time to take a break, Sandy.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was wondering.
Okay.
I went out and talked to the Kinsman man.
Oh, good. He's going to be very disappointed.
Well, it's
not going to happen.
I don't like that big tower up at the dump, but like I said, it's real nice to sit in my living room and be able to make a phone call or use my...
How tall is that one?
About 12 million feet, huh?
Never notice it there.
Well, it's right on top of the mountain. It's exactly
it
what the ordinance says.
Yeah.
We don't want
the
county to have
it. They say it's the county. The county's the one that leases the property. I mean, and everything that's in the current ordinance... If we got that, it would be a questionable call.
Yeah,
but
it would be.
Yeah, but the county leased it, so.
So it was automatic.
Yeah. All right. Let's
go.
Let's go, because the NFL draft starts in a few months, and I want to see where Deshaun goes.
Oh,
all right.
It was the intent of our office to make as few changes as possible to ordinances as we reviewed them, but as the comprehensive plan suggests, we want to ensure that we have coordination between jurisdictions and coordination between departments, and we touched base shortly with the building and permitting department about this and decided that as we are reviewing it, now is the time to make it more clear so that people can understand the ordinance. So you will notice It has a lot of grammatical changes. We've added commas. We have not shown you the commas because they were just commas. But we have tried to word things more clearly so that people can understand them. And we have worked with building and permitting regarding the conversation we had at our last meeting about permitting directional signs. So what you have in front of you has a lot more marks on it than previously. However, I wanted to start tonight's discussion reminding us about the purpose of the ordinance. So as we are reviewing changes, we can determine whether it meets the intent of the ordinance or if we need to modify them to meet the intent of the ordinance. And the purpose is straightforward on that first page, and it is to guide and regulate the construction and placement of signs in Transylvania County in order to preserve the scenic and aesthetic features and the quality of life for the residents and visitors. The Board of Commissioners is aware of and sensitive to the need for local businesses to adequately identify their products and services and is committed to safeguarding the interests of local businesses while providing reasonable regulations. The purpose is also to ensure the safety of the local and visiting motorists on the roads in Transylvania County by reducing the distracting influence of uncontrolled signs throughout the county. Similar to how we worked on the comp plan, I have the sign control ordinance up here. And I would... I'm happy to address any modifications here. I know of one word change that I made after downloading this version from what I have printed. But I also have the printed copy. So I'm working on the same document you are, but you may see a few slight wording changes in one location on the what you have in front.
The one on the screen isn't showing the red ones.
Need a review copy.
There it is. So, as I mentioned, last time we were discussing directional signs. And we wanted to come back to directional signs at this planning board meeting.
Can we go back?
You want to start at the very beginning?
I want to start with this jurisdiction administration. Just one brief comment for the new members. One of the concerns of the public in our research for the planning board was that there was not a lot of cooperation or communication between jurisdictions. And I think it's I personally think it's a really good idea as we're going through these to do what you said and to sort of try to lay that out as we review these, because sometimes these things were written and they just kind of get put in a hopper and really it's really not clear as to who's supposed to regulate.
The things that you see in red here were in the ordinance previously, but they were in Section 20.
Okay.
And so we found that we were using the term sign enforcement officer throughout the entire ordinance, but you didn't find out until one of the last couple of pages who that was, what department that was. And so there was no direction if you were wanting to place a sign, where do you go? So instead of having it at the back in the last article of the ordinance, we proposed to move the administration to be combined with a jurisdiction here on the front page.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, just based on the feedback we had from the planning or from the comprehensive plan.
It also matches our other ordinances more closely.
All right.
That was a concern of mine too, because it wasn't like I thought it was Mark all along. Like, no, it gets to the end. No, it's not.
It might address Mike's comment too about cross-jurisdictional agreement, that once the planning board gets to this, to their point, that won't it also be shared with other people for input?
It will. It will. And as I said, our discussion with building and permitting was only very short, and they will have a chance to review the entire thing so that they can say, yes, we are able to enforce this completely, and we understand who, when, where, what, as far as this permitting goes. But we also wanted to pose the question to you all of who else you would like to receive a copy for input. Would you like the city of Brevard to receive a copy of it? It's very different than their UDF. Would you like the town of Rosman? Who else would you like to receive a copy of it to provide input and reflection on ease of use and applicability to signs?
For you to, you gentlemen weren't involved in the process as much as Sandy was, but that was the big concern at a 50,000 foot level that Rosman, Brevard, and the county didn't always discuss things, the small things or the big things. And Rosman's going this way, Brevard's going this way, and the county's going this way. You know, so that was one of the big concerns. I think it was fairly significant numerically, you know, as far as a concern. So I think this is a good opportunity to clean these up and make them work. That's just my thought.
Does the town of Rosman adopt this ordinance? Do they have their own ordinance? Or?
They have the option to adopt this if they so choose.
But have they done that in the past?
I don't believe so. But I don't know.
They did on flood. Their flood ordinance they adopted for the babies, the counties. And there's it's not an ordinance, but the agreement to discuss modifications to water and sewer rates. And somewhere in here, this actually says that other jurisdictions can choose to adopt if they'd like, but they don't have.
It says that under jurisdiction, municipalities within Transylvania County may elect to allow this ordinance to be effective within their corporate limits.
But right now, the city of Brevard has their own.
City of Brevard has their own. Probably not like this.
It's a little bit bigger than this.
But I would like to see, I have no problem with both municipalities looking at it and commenting. I mean, I don't expect, Brevard's is much more restrictive and larger, and I wouldn't expect them to put this. I would think they're going to stick with their own, but I certainly would like Roger and Brevard to look at it. And suggest maybe they'll catch something we don't.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Okay.
Or they may have suggestions based on what they've learned, trial and error, coming up with theirs that maybe we might want to think about. I don't know. I don't know that we want to be any more restrictive, but sometimes they've had that conversation before. They could give us that input.
Mark also suggested maybe the Chamber of Commerce and the Tourism Development Authority, some sign companies.
I think that.
What will this? How will the public be made aware of these changes?
Oh, perfect question. We had that discussion earlier today with building and permitting, because we have a lot of businesses out there that have illegal signs right now, and it's just about to be tourist season, and they're wanting everyone's attention on them. Which I understand. However, we need to make sure that everyone knows there's a sign control ordinance. Not just those that are violating it today, but those who saw those signs and think it's a good idea to put tall moving signs on their property. And so once we have a finalized version, we would propose having an education campaign, letting them know that there is a sign control ordinance and what the purpose of the control ordinance is for safety of motorists and aesthetics of our county.
Has there been public comment of any kind on it so far? No.
Just the gentleman that was here last month. No.
Maybe we should figure out a way to do public input on somehow.
Okay.
once. I'm not sure people want to see sausage made, but when it's done, give the public the opportunity, you know, through.
Does an updated ordinance require a public hearing from the?
Yeah, that's what.
As part of the county commissioners.
Right. So yes. if the planning board develops this and we get input from everyone, and the planning board approves it, then you submit it to the county commissioners, who then would hold a public hearing, and then they would vote to approve it or not.
However, if you want to do additional ones.
Well, my other concern, from my perspective, if I were sitting on the outside and wasn't involved in these meetings, and all of a sudden you told me there was a sign control ordinance, I'd be a little, I'd be stomping my feet. I think part of that education process needs to be that
starting now.
This exists already.
Yeah.
And we're updating, we're not creating it.
Okay.
You know,
it's been 14 years.
Does that make sense? Because,
right.
You know, some of my friends are going to hear that and they're going to say, what are y'all doing down there? You know, when in fact this ordinance already exists. You know, right. So I think, you know, I think an education process is good. I just don't know what we need to do to make that.
So you want it to start sooner than once it's
I would prefer to let folks know
Perfect. What
we're doing. You know, when I did the update for the county commissioners, I told them that our plan this year was to do that. And it made it into the paper, but I'm not sure, you know, how many people read that article, got that deep into that article or whatever. So maybe we need to let folks know we're looking at ordinances. And
how do you do that?
When we put public notice as required in the newspaper for planning board meetings, can we say include a topic of a planning board meeting?
And we can, yes, if we, especially if we pay for an ad.
Or can.
Or
can
write an article?
Write an article.
Yeah.
I would just like people to know that we're not creating ordinances down here, we're looking at, we're reviewing them.
Right.
I like the idea of sending it to the sign company, so it's always nice to have the people, you know, from my background, you know, the engineers design the stuff, they never talk to the crew that builds the house,
right,
or whoever, so
right.
It's like, wait a minute,
right,
this is not the best way. I think that's great input for people that are going to be building these things and putting them in to say, well, this could be interpreted maybe differently, and it's confusing, because they're the ones doing it.
They can help the business owner.
Yeah.
We can, as a board, hold a public hearing or an information session or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe when we get this to the point where it's not doesn't look like that,
yeah.
I mean, it's got to look like this. We went through this with the comprehensive plan. It's got to look like this before it gets clean.
So is there some vehicle by which you can take a final draft and maybe do a public notice and say the final draft is available in your office for 14 days for people to come and look at?
But we don't want to have the final draft. We want it to be before that. But we can also do that as well.
Well, or a working draft or whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
And put it online. I'm not at this point where we are right now. I'm agreeing with you. Because people would read that and it would just, it's very muddled what this understanding. I don't understand it at this point. So, you know, we got to clear it up.
Yeah.
Once we get to that point, though, we can put it online and put a notice in the paper, whatever we got to do to say it's available for X amount of time for review.
Maybe have a in the robo room or something. I don't know.
Okay.
I just think some way we need to get it to the public for comment.
Before county commissioners.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think most of the time anyone in the public is involved and that will actually be affected by this sign company or business or whatever, by the time they find out about it, typically, the planning board's already approved it.
Right.
It's gone to the commissioners, and you know, it's just one vote away from being approved. And in my experience, most of the time, whenever there's a problem, you feel like you're standing with your hand out like this in front of the train trying to solve.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Things have gotten so far along that it's really hard to make changes.
Okay.
And I think the planning board, through the comprehensive plan, and through the time I've been on the planning board, has been very transparent. And I'd like to keep that going. I think we went out of our way, even. I think at some point it was
it became more work to be as transparent as we were. So I think I like that process.
The article in the paper, mm-hmm. do you want it to come from our office or from you as the chair?
Doesn't matter, whichever one you want to do. I mean,
okay.
You can even ghostwrite it.
Just make sure you tell them we're not going to put any pine branches on any signposts. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have that conversation.
I can get you a picture of one of those. I got it.
I've got it. They're all.
They stand up above everything else around it.
Well, there's.
And it's more obvious because it's bigger, yeah. It's fatter.
All right. Let's go back. Okay. Let's get back.
That's a good idea.
Deshaun's about to get drafted here.
So how much time do we have, Mike?
Go ahead. Just roll.
All right.
I don't want to go past about 9:15 or 9:30 anyway. I don't think anybody else does either.
No. No.
Yeah.
So it is our recommendation that we start back at Section 3, Article 6, with the directional signs.
Yeah.
You will notice that they are scratched out. They have been moved to Section 5. Building and permitting really wanted it to be easy, but they also said that a sheet of plywood, at the last discussion, to remind you guys, we talked about the size of directional signs, 32 square feet in area. And building and permitting recommended that if it's the size of a sheet of plywood or greater, that a permit be required so that they can inspect it for safety and secure fixation to the ground. And that if it was less than 32 square feet, they don't need to see it. Now, that was a casual conversation.
Right.
Once they review how it is in paper, they may have modifications. But in addition to the building and permitting discussion, we also had a lengthy discussion within the office about what makes a directional sign different than an off-premise sign. And you know what makes a difference? Content.
Mm-hmm.
Once you add an advertisement to directions, it becomes an off-premise.
Right.
Well, remember, the whole reason we're doing this is we can't regulate on content.
Right.
And so, we moved for simplicity as well as content-based, we moved directional signs to Section 5. So it's scratched out here, but it's still there. Intent. And you will notice that to address directional signs, because one of the concerns that you all had about directional signs was you didn't want everyone to have to come get a permit for a directional sign, mm-hmm. correct?
Right.
And so you'll notice in section 5.2, there is a sentence that says, off-premise signs. Oh, let me bring up the computer. Off-premise signs with a sign face less than 32 square feet do not require a permit, but must otherwise follow this ordinance. So design and location. Would need to meet the ordinance. And bear with me while I get there. So we moved that to section 5, off-premise signs. Section 5.1 stayed the same as it was previously. Section 5.2 now has off-premise signs with a sign face less than 32 square feet do not require a permit, but must otherwise follow this ordinance. A permit is required for signs with a sign face 32 square feet and greater. The other piece of the directional signs was that not more than 3 directional signs could contain directions to the same establishment, event, or location. Mm-hmm. To make it content neutral, It in 5.3, there's the not more than three off-premise signs shall contain directions or advertisement for the same establishment, event, or location on the same road. The distance of 75 feet was previously in one of the, it was in section 7, and for consistency, we wanted the distance to be the same, or we would suggest that it be the same. So, being no closer than 75 feet apart. You'll notice on the version in front of you, I found it very awkward to say being no closer than 75 feet apart. So, before printing it, I said shall be no closer than 75 feet apart.
Yeah, okay.
We were thinking about realty signs. We were thinking about the HughesNet signs that are everywhere, and we wanted to make sure that there were enough opportunities that they could advertise their property, their business, their establishment, their event, but also keep the aesthetics. And so, in addition to allowing the three off-premise signs per road, we also said that it could be up to, along up to five roads. So if you have a property for sale, or you have a church that is on a back road, you may need three signs on five different roads to get people there. Now, all of this is up for discussion and can be modified, but that would be a total of 15 off-premise signs. Is that too many?
That's a lot of signs.
It is.
Sounds like a lot to me.
It is a lot of signs.
Three signs along the same road.
Three signs along the same road.
I know 64 is a scenic highway, but let's use it as an example.
Because it's a long road,
right,
that goes through the whole county.
Right.
Okay.
Saying three signs from here, from right here, that way, and that way total in the county on 64. On the 64 road, we had three signs.
Mm-hmm.
But I could also have three signs on
Island Ford Road going towards.
I could have three signs on a crossroad between two roads.
Yeah, Morgan or something.
Yeah, I'm just.
You could have three signs on 276. You know, so you could advertise more than just those three signs.
But I could only have three signs. If 64
correct.
Was not a scenic highway, as an example, I could only have three signs on 64, but I could have three on the cross street.
Mm-hmm. I always think of Clara. Oh, yeah. I was thinking about it personally when we were writing it. I was thinking real estate signs. If you had a house on Hannaford Road or a small road, you're going to need to be able to have it on up to five roads potentially,
right,
to get people there. And because we can't regulate on content, we can regulate on premise versus off premise. But we can't regulate on content.
That sounds like a lot of signs. I mean, realistically, if I'm going to go with house hunting or I'm trying to find a yard sale or something, and it's out in the middle of nowhere, I'm going to pull it up on Google or I'm going to use GPS, which not always right, but I don't know.
It sounds like a lot, but if you take like a realtor having an open house,
yeah,
where they would normally put up a lot of signs, it would really be excessive.
That's just going to be one day.
Yeah.
Right. And so that gets into the question of temporary, which is section 7.
Before we
Yeah, that's great.
Having fun
that's
yet?
That's great.
Sorry, the first part.
On 5.2.
Yes.
Here you go.
What was the reasoning for the inspections department wanting to have less than 32 feet not required?
They don't want to have to require every small wooden sign that goes up.
But my thought is that if I had a sign company, I'm now going to have to take every sheet of plywood I make a sign on and cut half an inch off the side so that I don't have to come to the review.
Yeah, cut 6 inches off.
That's a valid, and we talked about that before.
We did.
How do you...
What is a measurement that,
I mean, it seems to me like a sheet of plywood is a sheet of plywood. It's pretty common to use that for signs.
And there was...
Anything this size or smaller doesn't require a permit. And, you know, if you do something bigger than a sheet of plywood, then you have to have a structurally built sign. By my way of thinking, it's going to require more grazing. It's going to require... some type of structure behind it, right, to make it bigger. But if it's 32 square feet or smaller, it's a pretty simple structure. But, it's kind of like you can buy a boat, an outboard boat motor that's 9.5 horsepower, because if it's 10 horsepower, then there's a lot of legs that you can't put it on, and you have to have it registered with the state. Right. So they don't sell a 10 horsepower motor, they sell a 9.5. And that's kind of what
I think you were trying to capture building and permitting thoughts that, especially on some of our curvy roads, that the sheet of plywood signs are relatively close to the road. So, how do we ensure that plywood doesn't come off in high winds, or that the sign doesn't fall over on the road at night? Or
and you have to make the breaking point somewhere.
But you're right,
we talked about
all
this.
Well,
what you're suggesting is that sign is greater than 32 square feet.
Right. Then it's covered. Right.
And that would allow a single plywood sheet to be used as a sign.
Did Mike say that building code required?
He didn't outright say that, but he implied it. And so I think that it may be one of those circumstances where you have to go back and you have to find the specific site in the building code and make sure that you have the correct information. I don't know. He didn't outright say that building code required foundation inspection for 32 square feet, but he said from a permitting and a stability standpoint, when you have concrete footers, a sheet of plywood would be good to inspect to make sure that it's in there correctly.
But you're going to count the piece of plywood and everything that's going around it increases the size, right? It's in.
It's the sign face.
The sign face.
Just
the letter.
Nothing that's holding it up. Just.
So if there is an image on it that is integral to the message or the message on the sign, it's included. But it's the sign face. It's not the support structures.
Okay.
So the conversation was something the size of a piece of plywood should be
not required.
Should be required.
That's what building and permitting said, but we can go back and make sure that it would require it based on building code, and see if they would accept the off-premise signs. With a sign face 32 square feet and less, do not require a permit, or less?
Yeah, that's what I was going for. Is there a big difference between 32 feet or less?
I think that's clear, 32 or less. Then.
Right. That allows less than 32 is 31 point something.
Yeah.
32 is 32.
I know.
Yeah, that's, but I mean, one piece of plywood. So if you're gonna go past one piece of plywood, yeah.
Yeah.
But that gets around. Okay, I'm cutting 2 inches off of it now. Right. It's but you know. Right.
Yeah. Because I see Max's point. I mean, that's
that's
unwieldy.
You know
to have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to throw this out there,
that's what I do.
28 square feet and greater, because then it's going to be too small. They're going to work their sheet of plywood. Shaving off an inch doesn't really matter, but losing 4 foot of power would.
So well, I mean, my point was it's the same engine. It's a 10-horse engine. They just put a 9.5-horse sticker on it. So that you don't have to go with getting it registered. And that's kind of where we are here.
But maybe instead of saying 32 square feet or greater requires a permit, 20 square feet and greater requires a permit, or 24 and greater.
But we're trying to reduce the permits, right? Or no? Trying to make it simpler.
I think we're trying to meet building and permitting and safety concerns that sheets of plywood attached on those roadways are actually attached. Versus, but we don't want to permit realtor signs or yard sale signs or little, you know, dumb shop church this way signs, little things that aren't as much of a safety hazard.
Our recommendation is we try that with Mike, see what he says.
Okay.
The way it's written.
The way it's modified.
Yeah, I mean, see what Mike has to say about it.
Okay.
That way, you know, you said he implied it but didn't state it.
Right.
And then if he states it, we'll at least know where we are.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Number of off-premise signs. Now, these are not temporary off-premise signs. These are off-premise signs.
So as Andy said, if it's going for if you're showing a house, that's going to be probably a temporary
sign. A temporary sign. Yeah. And it has pretty much the exact same wording under temporary. So do we want it to have the exact same wording under temporary or more permanent off-premise? Or do we want to make the difference here?
My concern, and I don't know how we address it, is what I said a little while ago.
64.
As an example, yeah, I mean, you only get three signs, but you can have three signs on a 150-foot cross street.
Yeah, but as it stands today, that's true, too.
Right, right. So, I mean, that's my concern. I don't know how we fix it, but that to me seems, you know, if I could have 15 signs, but I could put eight of them on 64. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just, you know, that to me is the biggest concern on that.
Well, we could do a set distance, but then it would be a lot harder to enforce.
Right. I agree. I mean,
if you have one stretch of road, it's easier to identify.
Right. I understand both sides of it. It's just, to me personally, seems, you know, from 64, from the Henderson County line to the Jackson County line, I can only have three signs.
Exactly.
But... So, it's not a big concern. That's something I want to... If there's a way to address it, I see what you're saying. If you put, you know, they can only be 6.2 miles apart, then you have to enforce that.
What would be an example of a temporary sign that was the whole sheet of plywood?
This doesn't meet the definition of temporary. This is just the point of off-premise signs, not temporary.
Yeah,
well, but
you
said the wording was the same.
Oh,
as temporary.
I meant 5.3. So not more than three.
Well, that's the same. It's the same size for temporary. Same size as restriction. 7.6, 32 square feet.
Yeah. We had that all crossed out last week. Oh, moved to section 4. Yeah, we crossed all that out.
No.
You're talking about 7.6.
7.6.
Yeah.
Temporary portable sign. 32, that's the size of a sheet of plywood. What?
Portable is defined as wheels, isn't it?
Temporary portable is of a material that is intended to be temporary. So a banner. Think about a banner. If it's 32 square feet, it's not going to necessarily be the shape of a sheet of plywood.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be the sturdiness of a sheet of plywood, because a sheet of plywood is intended to be there on a more permanent basis. If you look at the definition of temporary, it provides you with this, and I can read
okay.
it to you.
No, okay.
Temporary portable sign. A sign that is displayed for a limited period of time is not permanently affixed to the ground, is on wheels or a trailer, V-shaped sandwich signs, and or is made of materials such as paper, cloth, canvas, plastic sheet, cardboard, wallboard, or other like materials that appear to be intended for temporary display and easy movement. If a sign display area is permanent, but the copy display, copy is the wording on the sign, is subject to change, that sign shall not be regarded as temporary. So, that was the definition. But we are on section 5.
I know.
Yep. So, I don't want your heads to spin too much.
Too late.
I know. So,
this ain't bad, we have
now I know why we didn't get these ahead of time. Because, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I would have liked for you guys to get it ahead of time, but we probably would have gone line by line anyway.
Yeah.
Because it requires discussion.
We haven't got stuck on one word yet, so we're still on.
Yeah. 5.3. Not more than 3 off-premise signs. Are we good with that?
Mm.
Do we have changes?
Yeah.
Do we want to explore other options?
Yeah. I think it's pretty reasonable. I mean, technically, that many signs could be obnoxious. We wouldn't have to.
These are not temporary.
And then, if you had many more signs than that, then it probably would be a problem.
Our county is large.
And that's the way.
Think about the burger shape sign.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, though. I don't know how to fix the concern I have. So.
Okay.
I mean, like you said, it becomes an enforcement problem. Yeah.
Are there strong nays for allowing them up to 5 roads? That was an arbitrary number. It could be 3. It could be 7.
I think the signage becomes less of a problem for what you said, because I can punch an address in
right.
And find this. So.
Right, okay. So, off-premise sign shall be no closer than the edge of the right-of-way, or no closer than 20 feet from the edge of the traveled way, whichever is greater. Many of our roads here in Transylvania County, the right-of-way for the state-maintained road is ditch to ditch. They don't have a large right-of-way. So, except some stretches along NC 280, where there is more right-of-way. And so, in most circumstances, 20 feet would be the greater number. You'll notice in the comment that we have questioned whether 20 feet from the edge is realistic. Think about our 2-lane state-maintained roads, 276. But also think about the large trucks with the mirrors. How far off does it need to be safe? And yet visible.
And we check the building and permitting, and there's not a number.
Right.
We don't want it so far off the road that they're not going to notice it.
Right.
But we don't want it too close, so it'd be a problem.
Yeah, 20 feet from the traveled way on the water road.
Look at that power line. That's not 20 feet.
Actually, that
one of those big I'd rather
get a sign
than a power line.
The church, a good example might be in that picture of the church sign.
Yeah.
Right. Which I don't believe is 20. Well, not the landscaping sign, right?
Right there.
Right there.
There's
right
there.
That's reasonable, but not 20 feet.
That might be 15.
But if you hit that, you got bigger problems.
Exactly.
Over in the bridge. Yeah.
It's probably. Could be at the right of way. That one could be.
It could be. 276 is a major road. It could be at the right of way, but I would bet the right of way is in the ditch.
Most of 276 is right away, according to the discussion of Carol Parker this week, is ditch to ditch.
I think he was talking about a different route.
Oh, sorry.
But in this vicinity, there is a state maintained road that is ditch to ditch. And I think from, I know a little bit further down the road it is ditch to ditch. And so it's light, it could potentially be the edge of the right of way, or it could be ditch to ditch right here. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
I think that's a good example, because yes, that's a sign I think you see the most around the county, is the sheet of plywood sign for small businesses.
If the sign's 20 feet off the right of way, and even if it's right beside a driveway or some kind of roadway, you can pull up past it and look both ways. Looking down the road, it's not going to really obstruct someone pulling into traffic.
The site triangle is also addressed as far as being at an intersection or a driveway.
I think 20 feet is probably reasonable.
That, if that's 20 feet, that's very reasonable.
I don't know.
Is that 20 feet?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
Do you want us to measure that particular sign? And let you know.
Don't get killed, does it?
Is it 20 feet? That's horizontally. That's not going down the ditch. That's straight across.
Yeah. What's
the width? The width of this room is about 20 feet.
Lane width is between 10 and 12 feet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was probably a 10 foot
Yeah.
I would say that's 20 feet plus off the road.
So that whole road would likely be 21 feet. From white line to white line.
Regal Highway, I hope it
would be. So that would be 10 feet. So that, yeah.
I don't know if that's right.
So that sign is 10 feet.
Well, based on Mike's measurement right there.
Well, you got a whole perspective from, but I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is. Which is half of what it is currently.
Which is what this should be.
Right. But that's any further back, I don't know. That seems like that's better.
I think if any further back, you wouldn't see it.
I know. Yeah. I'm so glad.
I would think that's probably
20
feet.
You think it's 20 feet?
I don't think it is. I don't.
Do you?
I think it's close.
You just don't want it to be an illegal sign.
Oh, wait. Well, we should always drop that.
Yeah, we don't either.
For different reasons, probably, but yeah.
Before we make this decision, should we go measure some typical
pictures?
I can start noticing signs, I tell you.
When you get further out the highway, I don't know how you get it 20 feet away from the truck. Right. I don't either. If that's along there, it's no fault. If we measure that sign, it's in that situation, it's also hard to tell. I mean, in that situation, it's fine. As I said, if you're off the road and you hit that sign,
You got
bigger problems.
Yeah, okay.
But it may not be the same in every situation.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Well, on the other side of the road, it's more flat. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, aren't most roadways in the county like 60 foot right of ways, 30 feet either side of the center line?
I don't know what.
I know a lot of the newer roads have much larger right of ways.
Yeah. I don't know what primary standard is here. I was used to dealing with a 20-foot travel way, 25-foot minimum pavement on primary road, which this would be a primary road. I don't know whether that's the standard here or not. I know a lot of the farm roads are probably only 10 feet travel, 20 feet wide. That's relevant. You're probably wrong.
Like Highway 281 and Lake Talks was 100 feet or so. You know,
Right.
That road
the other thing.
And there was a 64 out that way, has a 30 foot from the center line.
Right. Another thing that used to be, you would see. Signs that said the right of way of this road is 66 feet.
Right.
That's a chain. That is a surveyor calls that a chain.
One thing we learned when we got a request from the garage company out 280 about putting up a new sign, the sign ordinance says out of the right-of-way or so many feet, whichever's greater. So they said, well, what's our right-of-way? So we contacted DOT and learned from them that even along 280, it's not a consistent right-of-way. It's per parking. So I don't think you can say there's some general thing.
Not for our county, no.
My other question
is, you're not allowed to put it, I mean, even the state doesn't allow you to put a sign in the right-of-way.
Right. Yeah. So it has to be the right-of-way or something greater. We got something greater than just the right-of-way, for example. Is this right-of-way we're just ditch-to-ditch? We still want it a little bit more out of the right-of-way than ditch-to-ditch in some places. But then I think of 276 and Cantrell Construction and Ponsty and a number of signs I see, and there's no, if you put them 20 feet off the road, they're either going to be impossible on one side and in the air on the other. And I think we still want Cantrell Construction to advertise.
That's
right. So one way is to say 15 feet off from the white line, or the right of way, whichever is greater, or maybe 30 feet from the center line.
Unless it's a two lane road. In the center line, I guess it would be the center line of that sign.
No.
Okay.
It would be the right of way. For the,
I think
the
measuring out the travel way makes it easy.
Then people don't have to go into the middle of the road
to measure.
Why do we want them any distance off of the right of way? Why couldn't we have the right of way?
Because we don't know the right of way for a lot of them.
It can be after right.
And if it's greater than,
it can be after right of way. That's what I'm saying.
If the right,
as long as the right of way is more than whatever minimum distance we study.
Yeah,
but on some places, if the right of mark just says that sometimes the right of way is white line to white line or ditch to ditch. So, for example, if this were ditch to ditch, do you want that sign any closer?
Where it is.
Because, I mean, some of them are flat. You know, they couldn't help, you know, as long as it's out of, if the right of way is just the edge of the road, that we're trucking here or hitting it.
Yeah, I think you have to define it simple to leave the center line.
The right line. Right. So, do we stick with what it has been for the last many years at 20 feet? Or do we think about allowing it to be closer to the edge of the road than 20 feet? And maybe consider 15 feet.
Or we went to measuring the other data and revisit?
Yeah.
Has it ever been an issue?
That's what I was just getting, same question. Has it ever been a problem?
It would be if it were enforced, because I think that that sign's closer than 20 feet.
Yeah.
So technically, the sign enforcement officer would have to tell me to move that sign.
And yet it presents no obvious problem.
Right.
Because you'd have to, if you're going to hit it, you've got to drive across, you got to fly across the ditch, which is impossible.
Do you want me to measure that sign and get back to you next planning board meeting?
Sure. I mean, that's, we have that. We know that.
Yeah. You have a copy of it right there.
Right. Yeah. That's, yeah. Well, I think staying on the yellow line.
I see where you're coming from.
And it's not a problem.
Right.
I mean, you know what
it's not a problem where the sign's located. It might be a problem for the sign enforcement officer if they were expected.
Well, yeah, let's just start with that and see what.
Okay. Perfect. I'll measure.
Of course, everything that's there now is that kind of grandfathered in.
Yeah.
The term.
We have non-conforming signs.
Right. Non-conforming
signs. Near the end.
Yeah.
The other thing.
They have been in place before 1991 when this was first written.
But if the distance is modified here, they are grandfathered in to whatever they were before this amendment, if the distance is modified. But if we're making it smaller, then...
Yeah.
The other thing, problem I have is, like I said, on that Greenville Highway, I don't know where you put it. Right. I mean, the highway is right against the bank.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, where are you going to put the sign?
Why does it go back to 91 and not 2003, since we have it the updates?
The definition of non-conforming signs, or the reason that was written in, was when the sign ordinance was originated in, was it 91?
Yeah.
So when they wrote it originally, or initially in 1991, they said all these existing signs are going to get registered or an emblem saying that they're grandfathered. We are assuming that most of those have fallen down in the last 7 years since it was written.
I was just going to ask, is this the reason why Mark did that video? Mm-hmm. Is it just for the signs, or was it all sorts of other issues, you know?
Originally, that video was for the signs, because that was when they were writing it, and they wanted to document where the non-conforming signs were at the time the ordinance was written.
So the distance... concern for the distance from the edge of the road or right away or whatever is number one, safety, where we're not going to hit the thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then visibility, particularly in the intersections. So what's the difference between a sign being 20 feet away and a power pole being 8 feet away?
Yeah.
I mean, that's that. I'd like to know that distance too, because I wouldn't have a problem with sign being that close. It's no closer than that.
I'm not sure here, but what I'm familiar with, power poles had to be located in that light.
They're just trying to get me killed.
Okay.
Whether that's true here or not.
Yeah, I don't know, but I mean,
right. And I don't know what that will say.
I will do some measurements and get back to you.
That was a regulation that came in on the interstate.
And you don't hold signs too close to the road if they obstruct your view. Kids coming out the road.
We're 6 feet in the right of way, so that mm-hmm. the crosshairs were not held.
If the sign is too close to the road, it kind of makes a tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're wanting us to put it at greater than 32 square feet.
Yeah.
The one major change of this section is adding the size, the 32 square feet, because that's what requires a permit. If we don't require a permit for smaller signs, and the dwelling unit was changed to personal residence. I think people understand what a personal residence is.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be apartments or a house or a condo, it's a personal residence. And dwelling unit was only used twice in the document, once in the definition and once here. And maybe one other place. But I think only twice in the whole document. And so we figured if we use personal residence instead of dwelling unit, we wouldn't have to define dwelling unit. Any changes?
Well, since we changed in 5.2 with 32 square feet sign or less, should we change 32 square feet?
I did. If you look up
that... You said greater than 32 square feet.
Off-premise signs greater than 32 square feet shall be at least...
Okay.
And yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
You can see the comments better on yours.
Okay.
Because I'm zoomed in so you can potentially see it.
Why did you use 660? Just for curiosity.
What, 660?
It says used worship located within 660 linear feet of a right-of-way, of the right-of-way.
That was what it was when it was written in 1991 or modified in 2003. I do not know. I don't have the history that Mark has.
Okay.
You may ask him.
Strange numbers. Why not 600 or 500? Why 600? There must have been some reason.
Maybe they measure it.
I don't know. Honest to God.
Who knows? So as written, 5 point, the next one down. 5 point, the next page. 5.6, or on the screen, 5.3.1. A property owner may have an off-premise sign placed on their property no closer than 500 feet from personal residences. So if his neighbor has a house right close to the property line, and he wants to allow his buddy to put up a sign on his property, it can't be more than 500 feet, or closer than 500 feet to his neighbor's property, or residence, or his residence. Hold on.
500 feet?
That's what it said. 500 feet.
That doesn't make sense in reality, I don't think, in my opinion.
I'm not sure how that relates to the neighbor. I'm kind of confused. You're going to put up a sign on your property?
No, someone else is going to put up a sign on your property with your permission. But they don't have to get your neighbor's permission. So you can tell them where you are willing to put the sign.
But should it be a minimal amount of feet from your neighbor's personal residence?
Should it be?
500 feet is longer than a football field.
Yeah.
Don't say football right now.
Sorry.
660 feet is an eighth of a mile.
An eighth of a mile.
Yeah, that's a little excessive.
That's 660.
Yeah.
Oh. Not 500.
So what you're saying?
So currently, as written, this has this whole piece to it.
Right.
We didn't feel like we needed a written notarized statement from the property owner that their friend could put a sign, or a local business could put a sign in their yard, because if they didn't want the sign there, they could take it away. They have that ability because it's their property, right? But their neighbor doesn't have the ability to take away that sign if it's close to their house. Now, that distance was in there previously. That sentence was in there previously. We left it at 500 feet because that's what it was previously. If you guys want to change it, change it. Or discuss it.
So if Kaylin and I are neighbors,
mm-hmm,
and Mac wants to put up a sign in my yard,
but you don't want to see it.
But Kaylin doesn't want to see it.
Well, I'll use an example of where I live. I have 120 feet of road frontage on 276.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So you want to put up a sign advertising your business? I say, sure, put it on my property.
Mm-hmm.
But my poor neighbor, literally, my property line encompasses, I mean, it's this far from their house.
Mm-hmm.
So Okay. Can I put a sign outside their bedroom window, 4 feet outside their bedroom window?
That's a touchy question.
It is, right?
Very touchy.
But the way this is written at 500 feet,
no, you can't.
I can't let you put your sign on my yard.
Right. Because you don't have 500 feet.
But I don't have 500 feet, but I have enough place that I think would be reasonable to put a sign. And when you think about that landscaping sign,
mm-hmm,
I'll bet you that flat by that piece of property isn't 500 feet long.
I would bet you.
But now, how close is the next house?
Right.
I don't know.
It's probably closer than 500 feet, I guess.
So do we want to do an arbitrary number of 100? Or half of 500 at 250?
Trying to picture 100 feet.
What distance would you be willing to have a sign outside your bedroom window?
Is it lighted?
Yeah. It might be. If it,
I don't want it at all.
Does it block the sun in the morning?
It might.
That's good.
It might be 25 feet tall.
It's a touchy question. I mean, it's...
This room is 50 feet.
Yeah, so it's probably 20 by 40, 20 by 50.
That's all the size I could
figure.
Okay.
It's lighter than the one block the sun.
And it's the biggest thing we've talked about, a sheet of plywood signs for... Mm-hmm. But this could be a sign that's 100 feet
square. It could. It could be a billboard. You could have a billboard right outside your bedroom window if we eliminate it completely. Or we could try to find a reasonable distance.
I think the concern to me is the distance, because that makes it really restrictive. I mean,
yeah.
It's different for on premise. Mm-hmm. So what keeps me from going to her and saying, "Hey, put this sign in your yard and tell me you put it there." So it's on premise.
It's not on premise unless it's advertising an establishment, event, or product sold on that parcel. So she has to start making the soap that you're selling on your billboard.
Yeah. Okay, let's go with that.
So what is the distance on premise?
Yeah.
I wonder where they came up with 500 feet.
Well, why don't we just throw this thing out a little bit?
Oh, me. All signs and structures should be located at least 25 feet from the abutting property lines and outside of all site triangles. This is visible triangles. That's for an on-premise sign.
So it could be 25 feet from your bedroom window. However,
I'm not getting this. So you want to come and put a sign in my yard?
Yeah.
And I say put it there.
Yeah.
And you put it there.
Yeah.
Who cares?
You don't care.
If I say put it in the corner of my property where my neighbor's bedroom window is, my neighbor's going to care.
Yeah, but you're probably going to increase the likelihood of that happening if it's got to be 500 feet from my house.
Yeah. Any house.
Oh, from personal residence.
All
right. Okay.
From personal residences, yeah. Any personal residences. Yeah, you wouldn't care if you're allowing them to do it. You wouldn't care if it was...
But if I'm next door and...
Right. And it's a billboard.
Yeah.
Seems like a...
Advertising ladies' underpants.
I don't care about that, but if it's lighted...
Yeah.
Right.
I would predict that the lights may go out on that thing.
They probably receive some damage.
When we do get to that part where it says about lighted signs, is that all the rays of light have to be on the sign, not...
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I understand both sides of this. Cause mm-hmm. It's my property, but at the same time, if I stick it in your bedroom window and turn lights on, then I'm... Your peace and solitude is interrupted by me.
Right.
And then, I mean, the way I think about it, if you have a house on 280, or you have a house on the Rollins Highway, it's not unreasonable to think that your neighbor might put a big sign up.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you are on some small side road, right, and it's kind of a neighbor.
Yeah, but if you put a sign on 280, does it matter how far that sign would be from a personal residence? There's still some personal residences on 280.
Yeah.
I bet you a big double-decker billboard is closer to 500 feet to a residence.
Well, certainly 500 feet.
Yeah.
Which is just too much.
Yeah.
So, would you be willing to have a billboard that is twice the distance of this room from your bedroom window? We're willing to have lots of residents of our county with a billboard next to their window. Just...
Well, if it's too close, then it's also a safety factor. Billboards do get fallen over and fall over.
I think the number's the concern.
I think it is too. You know, it that is. Seems like overly. Yeah.
That's why I was saying 100 feet is twice the distance of this room. Is that too close?
500 feet would be.
I don't think it would be too close.
Street over there.
So that would allow you. It would keep you from putting a billboard or an off-premise sign on your property next to the road.
I have 120 feet or so of coverage, but I have neighbors on either side of their houses close to the property line. Mm-hmm. So 100 feet would prevent me from putting a sign up. 50 feet wouldn't.
But 50 feet is close. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can we...
Man, I'm sorry.
Right, go ahead.
If it makes a difference to me if it's a sheet of plywood or a billboard, should we add that a property owner may have an off-premise sign placed on their property no closer than this many feet for sizes of this, signs of this size, and no closer than that many feet for signs of another size? Or so many feet for a lighted sign? Makes it more complicated.
Makes it more.
Do we want to think about it and come back?
Yeah, let's come back to that.
Right.
I would like to find out why, if anyone knows, 500 feet was that number.
I bet Mark will
know. 150 or 50 or, you know, whatever.
Okay.
It might have been just trying to limit size.
Right.
Okay. Why did they fight them?
Yes. We have not gotten very far.
They got past all these.
It is 9:07.
Can we go? Anybody mind going to 9:30?
Okay. 9:30 is okay.
Well, I think Deshaun will hold out. I don't think he's on. I'm hoping he goes to the Texans at 25th, so we'll be able about 11 o'clock. But, all right.
So we have covered Section 3 and Section 5.
Yeah.
And we're coming back to two of the things on Section 5.
Is there anything we can get done between now and then? Let's try to go to 9:30.
Let's do on-premise signs.
Okay.
There's not many changes there.
All right.
Except for the distance from the road, which you guys want to
already
back
up to number 8 pick, so.
Yeah, all right. I'm good.
So the distance from the road you want to come back to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What number are we on?
Section 6.
On premise.
Section 6.
Section 6. And I was looking for red markings. That doesn't mean that we can't discuss others. But that is what it says now.
We're going to go to 9:30. Is that right with you?
Sure.
Okay. All right.
Maybe 6.4 can go with, you know, taking our measurements of sign.
Exactly.
And come back to it.
But do we want to revisit any others?
Not right now.
Okay.
Reserve the right to recall the witness at any time.
Yeah.
Advise and extend our remarks.
There you go.
Section 7. This is what we kept coming back to, the temporary signs. I read you the definition earlier. Would you like me to read it again?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Yes.
6.3.
On-premise freestanding signs shall have only one sign face per side for no more than a total of two sign faces per sign structure. What is one sign face per side?
Seems like the landscape signs, the 6x6 meter and sheet of plywood on both sides.
Yes.
So they're
advertising a sign face on both sides.
How would you have more than one sign face per side?
If you have
a triangle.
Four.
That's what my first thought. That's what the second, the two sign faces per structure.
So that I would refer back to the definition.
Let's keep you from doing a four-sided sign or something, mm-hmm. Three-sided sign.
But mm-hmm. So does the one sign base per
side?
Sign area or sign face. The area of a sign shall be considered to be that of the smallest rectangular rectilinear figure that encompasses all lettering, wording, designing, or symbols, together with any background difference on which the sign is located. If such background is designed as an integral part of and related to the sign, all cutouts and extensions shall be included in the area of the sign. Supports and bracing should not be intended as part of the sign and shall be excluded from the sign face. So to me, what that means is you could not stack another sign on top of that. Mm. That's how I would interpret that. Mm. You guys interpreted it as a four-sided sign. And that would also be restricted.
The second part says only two sign faces per structure.
Right.
You can put up a three sign.
Right, or a four. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. But wouldn't it also restrict you from putting another one up top?
Advertising two businesses or two sheets of plywood on top of each other.
But doesn't this size restriction address that? Do you care?
If it's a billboard, yes. But
you can have up to 150 square feet. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Put 150
business
signs on there.
Fair enough.
It would
be harder,
but it would be effective.
What if we said that this sign, okay, sign shall have no more than two sign faces per structure, period.
And single parcels with one establishment may have one freestanding sign and one sign attached to the building. Multiple establishments on a single parcel may construct one freestanding group or identification sign per public road frontage. In addition, each establishment may construct one attached sign to the building per public road frontage of each establishment.
Pretty simple there.
Yeah. We did remove shopping centers. Most often shopping centers are on one parcel. If we need to keep shopping centers in there, let us know.
I think multiple establishments on a single parcel covers it.
Yeah.
I think it does too.
Okay.
Yeah.
On? Mm-hmm. On the code? Mm-hmm. Temporary portable sign regulations. Temporary portable signs do not require a permit or fee, but must otherwise follow this ordinance. So you can't have 20 temporary portable signs in front of your business. On-premise temporary portable signs shall be allowed for a maximum of 45 or 14 previously consecutive calendar days and may be displayed once at a 6-month period interval. If the sign is displayed greater than 45 consecutive days or more than once every 6 months, it shall be considered a permanent sign requiring a permit and will be considered in violation of this ordinance unless a permit is received. The reason that sentence is in red is it was moved from the enforcement section up to here, just so that they would know. Because if it's not requiring a permit or a fee, would you look in the enforcement section?
No.
So it's red not because we added it, but because we moved it. The blue we did add. Unless a permit is received. Any discussion?
I believe last time that the planning board changed it from 14 days to 45 days.
And that was to, would it, I'm having trouble speaking.
Christmas tree farming, it was your example.
Yeah.
2 weeks is not very long.
Right. 45 days covers from Thanksgiving to Christmas. Or a little bit longer on each side. But yeah.
I would throw out the question that I brought up with Joy. So a convenience store that I pass sells ice, firewood, and honey. And they've got their little temporary metal state sign that says ice. And they sell it more than 45 days. They sell it year-round. So do we want to tell them that they can't put out their ice sign for more than 45 days? And it's just a question. I don't know the answer, but...
There's a temporary sign down east that says, and I kid you not, it says Bibles, Baits, and Bait and Bullets.
Oh,
and nobody wants it down because it's such a great sign. I've gone through there for several years, and that sign's a temporary sign, and it's still Bible, Baits, and Bibles, Bait, and Bullets.
There's a store in
Bibles, Bait, and Bullets.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Bibles, Bait, and Bullets. Got the Bibles and Bullets. So.
But then there's those businesses that have the grand opening, and they put that out all year round.
Right.
Is it a grand opening?
No. Just trying to drag
it. But we can't just create them.
We can't.
I think the 45 days, A, doesn't discriminate on content, and B, gives them that's much more lenient than the previous 14 days.
Right.
You know, it's not, I think that even covers Christmas trees, I'd say, too, for the most part.
Okay.
And with a Christmas tree, they could go 45 consecutive days, take it down a day and put it back up, and still be within a 6-month interval. Right?
So that's why you like the 45
days? I think it's lenient, I think, yeah.
All right.
Do we have businesses in this county that have portable temporary signs that you know, I'm talking about the ones on, say, on wheels, you know, and that are there all year round? That we don't.
There are some
regulate?
Temporary portable signs that are out year round. The ones on wheels, like with the replaceable letters and the arrows, there's,
yes.
I would
there's
say
a
several.
Couple.
Yeah.
23.
I can't think where
I've seen them, but I've seen them. Your wheels are flat, but they're not so portable. Not anymore. Those are the ones you're talking about, mainly. I wouldn't be the one
that's,
you know, keeping up with all this.
All right. Not more than 3 temporary portable off-premise signs shall contain directions or advertisements to the same establishment, event, or location on the same road, being no closer than 75 feet apart, and shall be no closer to 75 feet apart.
Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah, these are temporary portable off-premise signs. Real estate. QSNET satellite service. Anything that is temporary construction, not applied to plywood.
These are all stuck in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Not permanently affixed.
Not permanently affixed.
Well, I don't know how you would. I guess you could put 3 trailers or something out there, or a sandwich sign or something.
Yeah,
I think this
goes back to the
apparently you can't stick it in the ground, not permanently affixed to the ground. But if it's not permanently affixed, put it in, take it out every night or something like that. Is that?
Then it would be an off-premise sign, and as long as it's less than 32 square feet, you still wouldn't need a permit.
Still
leaving. And you would still be meeting the sign ordinance if you didn't have more than 15 or more than 3 on one single road in the county.
Right.
Joy, is this what was covering what was called the vermishing signs?
Mm-hmm. If there's only 3 of them on the same road and they're illegal, if there's more than three, then
but they have to be 75 feet apart. So
it would have to be 75 feet apart.
So that keeps it from being that's a sign posted right after another with a message. All close to each other.
Unless you have a really long parcel. And you
they still have to be 75 feet.
They still have to be 75 feet. Yep. Now, because we are allowing three temporary portable off-premise signs for each establishment or event or sale property that's for sale, we can no longer have temporary portable off-premise signs prohibited either in Section 4, Section 5, or Section 7. Is that okay?
Because these used to be exempted.
Directional signs used to be exempted. Remember, they had to be directional in nature. Because we're not using direction as a content. Now it opens up any kind of sign. As long as there's no more than three of them for the same event, location, product, or business. On the same road, we're not regulating.
Well, you kind of are regulating.
We're limiting them to the three, correct?
Right. Right.
And up to 15 for the county.
For aesthetics.
Jordy, is this question section 7, 7.3?
No. 7.3. Yes?
It refers to temporary portable off-premise signs. Did we already address, or where do we address temporary portable on-premise? Why are we calling out off-premise here?
Most likely because we copied and pasted.
I'm asking the question of myself out loud.
Because on-premise, you are only allowed one freestanding sign.
We did. It's on 7.2. It starts with on-premise temporary portable signs shall be blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then this, so maybe we should just start the sentence with off-premise temporary portable signs shall have no more than three.
That's a good idea. It's consistent.
Okay. Can you put three temporary portable off-premise signs and three off-premise permanent off-premise signs on the same road?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
There is nothing that I'm aware of after reading this over and over and over again that would prohibit that. In what?
Well, I mean, the way someone who wants to put a sign up is they read this. Thinking, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What can I do?
Right.
I'm fine.
There's always some guy like me sitting out there to say, yeah, what's this? I can put eight signs.
Ain't nothing says I can't. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, as long as we're comfortable with it. As long as we're comfortable with it, you know what I mean?
Or 15.
Yeah.
Or 30.
As long as we're comfortable with it.
Oh, Lord. 30.
Yeah. But
15 of them permanently affixed to the ground and of quality materials and 15.
You know the tape, though, right? You.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It's 25 after. We got two more agenda items. Should we stop now? And the last one is just other and public, I mean, public and board member comment. Do you have anything else like director's report or?
Well, we were asked earlier today what's going on in the office, and we have been busy. We're in the process of finalizing a contract with the City of Asheville to receive home funds for rehabilitating three owner-occupied homes that are owned by low-income individuals in the county. We are working with NCDOT and the county manager and commissioners to determine how we want to move forward with a comprehensive bike planning grant that we received from NCDOT. And we are working with community centers. The reason Mark was not available last Thursday was he was at Little River providing information for them. I believe Kaylin was also in attendance. She can give you an update on what was said and how it went.
We are trying to reach out to all the community centers, and you all recall that might be new news to you that in January we invited all of the county's community centers to a gathering, which we had a report of elections. We had 12 of the total 14 community centers. We had 10 come. 12 were very interested, two just couldn't come. And then two community centers are struggling or considered inactive at the moment. But our office is looking at how we can help the community centers with any support, grant writing. United Way Train did a grant writing seminar, which I think Joy's going to mention, and a number of the community centers were there, and Joy and I were there. So, it's just how can we support community centers, and some of them what, you know, what support they can, and some are doing fine, and so it's a community center guided support, yeah. Letting them pick what they want.
Part of that came from the comprehensive plan, and part of that came from the county commissioners. There was a discussion one night in the planning board in a comprehensive plan meeting about the fact that communities had no center anymore. You know, and that we had become separated, and it kind of got bigger, because if this community's not together, then when you talk about this community versus this community, they're not together, so they can't cooperate. So that kind of was an organic discussion about what can we do to help community centers, and at the same time, the county commissioners were working on the same problem. So it's something that's of interest in the county, is restoring that center, either as a building or as a way of life, restoring the center of the community. And one of the things we felt like was the building itself kind of represented, was a physical representation of the center of the community, thus called a community center, right? Yeah. But, yeah.
One of the common things that they all mentioned at the community center meeting was that they are all looking for volunteers that are willing to spend time maintaining or setting up for events or cleaning the property. And that was a common thing. So they want more activity at their centers.
And volunteers are becoming a problem nationwide. Yeah. I was at Monday night's county commissioners meeting. That was one of the things fire chiefs kept bringing up, was we're having a difficult time getting volunteers. A lot of fire departments in the county are going to a daytime, full-time firemen or rescue personnel on scene because of that very thing you're talking about. You couldn't find volunteers. So it's not just in the community centers, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still haven't filled my position on the city planning board.
So here you go.
You apparently have no applications.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there's several county boards that are open and are in the same shape. So.
All right. That is all that I can think of. There is a quasi-judicial training that was mentioned at the last meeting. Have any of you looked at your calendars and decided you wanted to go?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes.
There's 2 days before we meet again.
The 23rd? At the Arboretum?
May 23rd.
May 23rd.
Yes, I definitely want to go there.
Okay.
I work that day.
have a time.
It feels like time. And
it's at the bottom of the what I sent you.
Oh, is it in here?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
We read our, what we got.
Oh, okay.
Isn't it?
Like I said, you just called me here a while ago.
They're not in there. I'm looking at the document that I handed it out at the last meeting.
Yeah.
And it was in the email.
Yeah, this is it here.
Yeah.
Was I supposed to?
I'll send it back out with the time and the details.
Okay, please do. Thank you.
Okay.
Is that recommended, I assume?
It is the type. It is the main type of decision making that you will do on the planning board. It's quasi judicial. You guys did it tonight with the telecommunications tower. And so it's put on by the School of Government to give you guys a little bit more background and anyone who is interested in going on the process and the responsibilities for that type of decision making.
Also, I don't know if anybody's interested, there's a the drive-through of the construction in Toxwell, pretty much the same, pretty sure Mapcast too, but there's about 2.5-3 mile stretch of 64 that's being redesigned. It's a mess at the moment, but
Maine First NCDOT is having a tour.
Right.
Of the site. We are meeting at Rosman Town Hall at 3 o'clock.
Anybody that was. Mark sent it out to all of us, so we're obviously on the list, but he had.
You're invited.
Yeah. When is that?
It is May 1st at 3 o'clock, so next Monday. If you want to go on a driving tour with NCDOT, Larry Chapman will be there. Transportation Advisory Committee members will be there. There will be a member from the press there. You'll get to see the work that is being done on 64 and get a firsthand discussion with NCDOT.
If any of you do plan on going, you'll need to email me tomorrow morning because the NCDOT is already arranging for transportation based on the numbers they have.
Yes.
So if you would like to join us, let me know.
What time is it again?
3 o'clock, 3. May 1st.
We need Rosman Town Hall at 3.
Rosman Town Hall at 3.
Yeah. Rosman Town Hall at 3. It's a horrible way for me to drive up to
the place. Yeah, it is, I think.
On 310 Max Street.
Thank you for bringing that up.
I would think I would like to go on that.
I will contact the DOT and let them know we're adding two.
I just totally missed that email. I don't know. I just saw it. I don't know
why I saw it, but that one popped out at me.
That's unusual.
For me to see it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
Is that it? All right. Matt, got any comments?
I'm good.
Having fun?
All right. I don't either. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Brown selected a defensive end.
It is moved and seconded. It is not debatable nor amendable. All in favor, just get up and go. We bought one of those.